Moving along, agenda item number 15. Public hearing here pertaining to oyster harvests. Dr. Wesson.
At last meeting, we requested a public hearing on two issues. One was an area in Mobjack, and one is actually opening a handong season in the for Seaside. But so I'm gonna start with the Mobjack one first. Mobjack is part of a three-area rotation that we've started. Two areas in the York rotate to a third area in Mobjack, then back to York, so it's 3 years in between. And this year was the year to come around to Mobjack. We have these two areas in Mobjack that we do work on. And when we did our dredge survey, which is a qualitative survey, you know, we found that we saw this great big spat set. It's actually a big spat set on both areas, but it's an exceptionally large one on the smaller area that's open in called Pulse's Bar. And along with this great big spat set, which is the highest by far that VIMS or VMRC had ever seen in the survey, we had almost no market oysters. So the question was, should we protect this for the next time it comes around, as opposed to letting people go in and try to get those few market oysters and hurt the spat set? We had time since the last meeting to go and do the quantitative survey, and what we had seen in the dredge survey held up. For toe steak, I mean, this is the mean of the past. Since we've done significant restoration in Mobjack, we did it and began in 2007, and the average to 2008 to 14, that's what you see. And so the spat set jumped way up from this average over that time to way over 150. It had been down around an average of 20 per year. And the same thing was for pulses. It had jumped from this about 15 per year up to this one time occurrence of, and that this is how many oyster spat there are per meter. So this is a much more quantitative survey, and that's a lot of spat per meter. This just shows that just pulling the spat out. And then the flip side of that is that, you know, even though biologically speaking, if you should protect toe steak too, but what we see on toe steak, the average of market oysters has gone up as it should in a rotation. So, you know, we're willing to take whatever lumps we take there and suggesting that we keep that open. But this area in Pulse, I mean, it's not even a half an oyster per meter there, market oyster, while we have that great big spat set, which when you multiply it over the 14 acres that are there, it's, you know, between 50 and 100 bushels of market oysters are there with the potential for a great big return the next time we come around. So that was the issue for this public hearing is to just keep this one area open, the bigger area, toe steak, and take this one off the map for this year for an area that's open. We also, the issue for the handongs is that on Seaside, in my entire career here, it's only been you go out at low tide, intertidally, you pick up oysters by hand. And we have a special by-hand user fee. They don't have any limits. They only work at low tide, so there's no use doing a limit with them. And they don't have any time limits either because you work around the tide. And in order to try this handong, we will have to put some restrictions in over there that we've not had before. And that's why we're trying to look at this as a trial for this year to see what it is, but we've already 2 months of the season will have already been passed, November, December, with my hand. And then we have 3 more months, January, February, and March, that this would be open for. In order for the person to do that handong, he'll have to switch from his $50 user fee to a $300 user fee, because you can't get a handong license without it. And it'll also mean that he will not be restricted to just low tide. You'll be able to use his handongs at any tide. So even though we're not suggesting a time period. We are suggesting that that they do have the same 8 bushel per man limit that we have for every other hand taller around. So we had to add this one little piece to the regulation just to add that 8 per man times the number of people that are on the boat in order to get your limit if you have more than one person on the boat. So those are the two issues. We don't really see there'd be any problem with having a hand tong. Generally, oysters do not survive, even though we get set subtidally on seaside, they don't survive because of the intense predation. So we don't think there's a lot of oysters out there in this deep water that some of the watermen think there might be. But there may be a few areas that all that ice we had last year could have pushed some oysters off into the deeper water, and there's a little bit. But I'm kind of leery of whether they'll how many people will actually be interested in this, but it is being recommended that we're finishing out this year. So any questions on those?
Questions from the commission.
So what's this hand tong setup going to look like on the seaside? Can you
just hand tongs are you carry them on your boat, you reach over.
Right, it's a total hand tong, no mechanical anything involved.
Just
hand
tong. Mr. Erskine.
Jim, the two areas in the Mobjack that you showed, toe stake and the pulses, so toe stake is a larger area, and there was a considerable spat set in that area. Would you say it was uniform, or was it like a real patchy in toe stake?
It was a good spat.
It was over the, okay. And as a follow-up, there seems to be more market-size oysters in there compared to pulses,
right,
and higher than the average.
Yes.
But would you say, in here it said maybe pulses had 100 bushels. Would toast? Do you have an estimate or an assessment on how many market size oysters, how many bushels?
It's not going to be a windfall. It's not going to be like what we see in New York River, because it's 20 acres, 25 acres there, and it's broken bottom. But the areas that we've done shell planting on are very consistent with what's there. We've known going into Mobjack it was going to be less than what we've seen in New York. That's where we're rotating into. We've got some other areas in Mobjack that down the road will be coming into the Mobjack one. It was shelled back in 2010. We had not gotten a spat set on that since we did the shelling in 2010. So finally this year we've got a spat set. So there'll actually be three areas when we come around again in Toast Lake. And if we get more money, there's more areas that we can shell to make Mobjack equivalent to New York. But for right now, it's just what it is And we knew that going in this year. Maybe 3,000, 5,000 tops for the Mobjack for that area. So.
For that one area, for toe stake.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the commission? I got a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Pulse's Bar.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best spat set we've seen has been recorded in 45 years.
Well, we don't have any, that's as far as our records go back. Ben has done dredge surveys, we've done dredge surveys, but we can't find, we think maybe somebody left the season past, but we can't find any of them.
So this is potentially excellent news for a few years down the road here.
Yes. It's just the best news that you could have.
So there aren't very many market-sized oysters on Pulse Bar. With your estimate, I believe in the evaluation is around 100 bushels.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if we kept this open to harvest those 100 bushels, what would happen to the spat set that we've seen?
Well, it's going to be a good test for us right now, because we'll be able to look at toe stake after harvest, and we'll be looking at pulse after harvest and see what it will be.
What would happen to the spat
if we harvest?
Context dredge gear.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We'll have a perfect test if we leave toe stake open and pulses to look next year and see, how the spat survived in the harvest area versus the other one. But as an example, we've seen this very good spat set on the western shore this year. This is Area 5, which we just finished up at Temple Bay. This is the spat set on the sanctuary. This is the spat set after they've done with it. And they started up about the same. So this is, I mean, one of the important things about rotation is that it gives the juveniles, the 3 year of rotation is definitely better. It gives them 2 years to get out of that size when they're so subject to damage by the gear. Once an oyster gets to be a small oyster and has a hard shell, you can roll him around in that gear and it doesn't seem to bother him. But when they are, these are about from the size of a pencil eraser to the size of a dime. And if just rubbing a shell on them rubs them off. So that they're like cellophane in how soft they are. And once they get through that and they get a year's life on them, then they're much more prone to live through the harvest.
So you're saying that dressing at this point for these limited number of oysters would do incalculable damage to the spat sets we see now that could have great benefit for down the road. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Mr. Erson.
Jim, I just don't understand what that's telling us there. What year is that?
This year.
This year's stat set?
This is just what we finished in Pebble Bay. This right here is, in all of our areas, rotation areas, we have sanctuaries that, you know, they got a little spiking on them, but thankfully they've been left alone. And so this is the stat set on the area that was not dredged. And this is stat set on the area that they dredged. And it started out comparable.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's about 90% mortality on the small fat. But again, that's the beauty of the rotation, is that you sacrifice those two areas, but you got four areas that are getting big at the same time that you're moving along.
That would seem to be a different conclusion than the argument we have long heard that turning over the shell will increase reproduction.
That's been scientifically shown not to be true so many times in my career that, I mean, it makes sense to think that it's something like farming, but it is not farming. I mean, the same thing about the cult is that the culch in Area 5 last year when it wasn't harvested, and this is after the harvest. And you see just the damage to the shell takes you down every year. If it was working the bottom, this year would have jumped up, and we would have had more culch. But you do not pull. What gets rid of culch for us is the degradation by chemistry and the degradation by boring sponges. And harvest has a minimal impact either way, except for the fact that once the shell gets soft, then it'll start crunching some of them up and putting them in smaller bits. But it doesn't really, what we're looking at here, this is the brown shells available. And so it doesn't really make less shell, it just makes the shell less attractive. And that's why we have to go in and reshell, that's why we monitor our shell and keep above this 5 liter. In this case, you know, we'll probably go back in because this was looking at it immediately, like just a couple days after they had finished in there, and some of that will actually go down as it sinks back into the bottom. So by the time we would look in the spring, this will be down here somewhere below our 5 liter threshold. So that area 5 will be one of the areas we reshell this year to get it ready for the next time it comes. I mean, if harvesting brought shell up, we'd have so many oysters in Chesapeake Bay that we wouldn't know what to do with them.
Further questions from the commission? Mr. Tacker.
Would you just define culch for the audience?
Culch is anything we happen to use for setting material. I mean, generally, we're familiar with house shell and dread shell, but we have used clam shell, we have used star clam shell. We're now trying, you could consider it even the small gravel that we're using. I mean, it's cultures is setting material.
Is there any particular size to culture or limit to size?
the biggest limit to the size is the smaller it gets, the more susceptible the spat are to predation. Because an orchard that you say grows up on a big shell versus an orchard that grows up on a little bit for like rays or crabs. A crab, if it's on a little teeny bit like we see cultless, that's the reason they have to put them in bags and cages. But what we also see that on the ground. When our shell bits get small, then a crab can just pick that thing up and with his claws move it all around. Where it's on the side of a shell, they got to put effort into peeling it off. So the bigger the shell, the better, and the better shape our shell is, and the better. But, you know, when we're talking about flipping to, and also the bigger it is, the less likely it sinks into the bottom because it's got more surface to keep it from going in the sand or the mud. But for the concrete and stuff we're looking at right now, we've got to limit ourselves to smaller pieces that can actually be picked up in the dredge and not do damage to the orchards that are there, because the concrete weighs more than the orchard and banging on each other. So the alternatives that we're looking at that seem to be very, very encouraging. And we got some of the highest spats that we saw this year on using gravel. It's just a little bit bigger than like a small road gravel. That's bigger than a marble, but smaller than a quarter, using that size. And, I mean, we got like 500 spat per meter on that this year in the Rappahannock, which we didn't have any shell that did that well. So it's very encouraging for, you know, as we see ourselves running out of shell down the road, that we may be able to use some other stuff. So.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Dr. Weston. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard on this matter? Mr. Kellum.
Mr. Bull, members of the commission, I'm Tommy Kellum with Kellum Orchard Company. We're a fourth generation orchard processor located on the Rappahannock River. On behalf of our company, I'd like to speak in favor of closing the Pulse's Bar. I think we've heard evidence of why it would make sense and the potential we could have down the road. In addition to that, I'd also like, with the emergency that this creates for the industry as far as companies like our own and the watermen on the bay dependent on this, to ask for an extension of the James River area that's currently open for the month of January. Thanks to the success we've had in the Rappahannock and the Great Wicomico, a lot of pressure that's typically on the James has not been there, so we've opened up a venue for possibly using that area to supplement what we're going to lose from the Pulse's area. And in conclusion, I would like to say, with all the doom and gloom that you guys so typically hear, our company, for the first time since the mid-60s, ran our plant October through the Thanksgiving orders on 100% Virginia orchards. And Commissioner Bull could attest, we've got a pretty decent-sized operation. That was a fair amount of resource that ended up from North Dakota east to New England, south to Dallas, Texas, and parts of Florida. So it's a pretty positive thing that we've seen. So I would like to ask for consideration to the James River area. Thank you.
Mr. France.
Mr. Kellum. Question. Would your extension be for the month of January and also leaving it open in March, or just moving March to January?
I would think it would be in the best interest of the industry if we had to move from March to January. I don't know the mechanisms or the mechanics of whether that's possible, but from my aspect, I think it would be more important to have that resource in January than March, because market conditions, as well as for the watermen, there are other venues of opportunity. Moving seed oysters, working on private ground, crabbing's close to start, and there are other things to do in the month of March that aren't available in January.
Thank you. Mr. France, I believe Mr. Hull can answer the mechanisms in that question.
Yeah, so the emergency regulation can only remain in force for 30 days. So really the only thing that it would address would be opening it for January. And then when we come back and make it permanent, if we do, you would address whether to close it for March or not.
Okay. Ms. Erskine.
I'm sorry.
I was going to ask for more comment for public hearing.
I apologize.
I thought you were going to continue along the same path.
I apologize.
Anybody else in the audience wish to be heard on this matter? It's a public hearing. You want to talk about oysters? Now's the time. Mr. Clare, please come forward.
Is there such a thing that there's too much fat on the shell? Does that grow wrapped up like a seaside oyster? It's not going to be very marketable. Is there enough food in the water to sustain all this fat and this new fat that's coming on? I had an oyster ground. I planted most of the oysters I ever seen on it, and I went back a month later, and they were all dead. I don't know if it was because of food or what it was. But is this a possibility? There's too much fat on this stuff, and it grow correctly, or the watermen need to work it down a little bit.
We're certainly not going to have 100% of any of these places. We never see 100% of the fat set make it, no matter whether it's low fat set or high fat set. And you probably will have a higher percentage of the fat die in a place like Pulse. But it won't be because of lack of food. It's more that you attract predators in, small crabs, and there's a little flatworm called a stylocus that the thicker the fat are, they come in and they can get them. But we see very good amounts of fat that hold up in the Piag Tank and the Great Comico in areas where if we can hold 100 smalls out of those 1,200, we will have more oysters on these bars than we've ever seen. That's a 90% mortality. So I don't think that is a limiting factor in that area.
We had about 20 years ago when the Pocomo sound, the most fat anybody had ever seen, and the most small oysters. And everybody thought they were going to make a lot of money the next year. And we went out there, and there wasn't one bushel caught. Everything died. All the fat, all the oysters and everything. I don't know why. MSX, dermo. But is this going to happen again? Is it a cycle?
Well, I mean, we know right now that for whatever reason that MSX from the VIM studies that Brian Carnegie has done has eased off on it. And that used to be the major disease impactor on sea. So, I mean, MSX could come back tomorrow, but right now, in all the surveys, it's as low as we've seen it. So, I can't imagine that would be an issue. We don't see it in the James, we don't see it in these other sea rivers, so they should do fine.
Is this the time to talk about the Saxus oysters too?
In what regard?
To try to open up 9, 10, 11.
We heard you all during the public comment period.
Okay. I just wondered if it's time to bring it up again.
Nope.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned here, it's been addressed to the commission. We all heard you all. Commission didn't move to take any action on that. This is a matter involving Pulse's Bar and whether or not to open up the James River for a month.
I'm curious on
that. Okay.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to address the commission on this matter? Anyone? Going twice, going three times. Public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. What's your will, ladies and gentlemen? Mr. Erskine.
So it seems unusual, I guess, in a good sense, that there's a very high spat set on Pulse Bar, and maybe Toast Steak for that matter, but I guess the staff has recommended Pulse Bar be closed, and I can appreciate that. There's not as many market-sized oysters. And as Mr. Kellum said, that there may be an alternative to compensate for that. I think as we had public noticed and had a public hearing back in the summer about these areas to open up for the harvest season, obviously we included Pulse's Bar. We also had the James River that was open to hand scrape until the end of the year and then open in March. I seem to recall that some of the assessments was a decrease in the abundance in some areas, but the James River was an area that anticipated to have continued high amount of harvest. And with that in the back of my mind, I would support the recommendation from staff with the modification to continue the hand scrape season in the James River through January 31st, 2016. In the form of a motion.
Second.
Okay. Make sure I got this right. So, it's in effect a motion to accept the staff recommendation with a variation to it, and the variation would be to open the James River for hand scrape from January 1st through the end of January.
Yes, sir. Under the emergency provision that we have available to us.
Exactly right. So the emergency provision would kick in January 1st and would last through January. Correct, Mr. Hull?
That's correct.
And we would leave the March issue intact as previously adopted.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's the motion. It's a motion by Mr. Erskine, and it's a second by Mrs. Kellum.
I had a question after discussion after my second.
Let's have a discussion here.
You were including the hand hog for the Eastern Shore.
Are we doing those together? Are those separate?
I'm sorry. I thought that you were basically going with a staff recommendation.
The hand tong.
With the variation being the opening for a month of the James River for hand scrape in January.
To compensate the Poulsen Bar was
right.
The idea. And the high abundance that's in the James River. But, yes, accepting staff recommendation on the hand tong seaside.
Thank you.
No, we would be leaving March as already adopted.
Okay.
If they want to change their mind about March, we'll take that up later.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to add some more discussion to this. It may be Dr. Wesson. With the Great Wicomico, it's not appearing to be what it was supposed to be or what it was thought it was going to be. What would be the chances of extending one of the areas on the Rappahannock for an extra month? I really don't look at the Great Wicomico lasting until Christmas, really. I mean, it's taken until 2 o'clock, but people catch the limit now there.
Well, I didn't have it to bring up here because we just have finished it up. But the number of market oysters in the Great Wicomico is higher than it was last year. The Great Wicomico grows an oyster that is round, and it rounds up and becomes market size somewhere between 2 3/4 inches and 3 1/4 inches, and that's where it stays. And I mean, frankly, the industry is pretty spoiled on getting their limit so fast that they don't want to do any culling anymore. I mean, it's just, there's more oysters out there than there were last year, but everybody's having to work to the end of the day to get it. So I mean, I don't think we want to sacrifice. Temple Bay went down to from 13 or 14 oysters per meter to 1.5, and that's basically where we are in Pocono Sound, where they can't get to that. I mean, they had a month they could have gone back to that area and work it if they wanted to, and they want to go to the quickest area to get the quickest limit, and so they jump from areas, but you know. I think the Great Wicomico will be fine if they continue to just spend the time. You might not be able to get your whole 16 bushels every day, but you're going to be able to get something. I mean, the other thing about the Great Wicomico that is not a fault of the resource is that because it's that orchard that size, it shucks into a less desirable size of orchard to the smallest size that goes in the shucking. So that's the other reason that you know they may not be getting the price that they were getting for the bigger orchards because these don't shuck as well as they were before. But the James is different because the James last year we had the York come January 1st like the Mobjack is, and we had a significant exodus from the James to the York. And so the reason that we took March this year was because. And as you remember that, where they, I mean, the way these things open, they pick up and they go to the easiest areas. And so after 2 months in the James, another month is going to be the hardest month. It is going down, and when you get more people in there, it's going to go down faster. And I don't think we can add a fourth month, but the difference between March and January, it'd make a difference. The, The fact is, this year, they know they can't go to Mobject because there's not that much stuff there. So January fits better. And if we had, you know, if we had thought about that, we could have run them. But they just know that February and March are going to be very lean for orchards in Virginia, and we've known that when this year is going to start. So the orchards are there in the Greater Wicomico. It's just that they are, people are so afraid, which is they should be, of law enforcement for undersized orchards that they've got to put their stick. They've got to measure every single orchard, and that makes it go slow. So I would not recommend opening another area.
Well, I'm not asking to open a new area. I just wanted to leave an area open. I'd like to, if you start with the commission, to ask somebody from industry their opinion on Great Wicomico. Is that a problem?
It's not a problem with me.
I mean, I'd like to if Mr. Cullen would say something. I think he's buying oysters from Great Wicomico.
To echo Mr. Francis' comment, we are seeing a much smaller orchard in the Great Wicomico this year. Typically, we've got two issues there. One is Dr. Busman spoke of. I think the watermen, you guys hear about all the bad guys. I mean, that's what your venue is here. But there are an overwhelming majority that want to do things right and look at this resource as their lifeline. And we hear it over and over. I heard it on the way down here today. We have four boats that left the Great Wicomico that asked to come back to my facility at the Rappahannock. And the question was, the comment was, we're going to get a ticket there. And apparently it's measure every one. To give you an idea, when I say measure every one, a bushel of Rappahannock oysters is counting about 215-20. We counted a bushel of these Great Wicomicos yesterday. They were 310. So a waterman's got to physically touch 310, if it's two people on the boat, times 16 bushels every oyster to measure it. So it is a tough resource for them to work with, and likewise, it's a tough resource right now for us to work with. Shuckers are paid by a piece rate according to what they shuck, so they're not wild about shucking 310 oysters that are barely, you know, that are barely over 3 inches as compared to 3.5 to 4 inch Rappahannock, James River, Pocomo Sound, some of the other resources we have available now. There is an awesome amount of oysters from what I see in the Great Wicomico. The stock seems to be healthy. The quality of the meat there, albeit it's small, it's standards. It looks healthy and appears good, but I would have to think it's going to be pretty tough for watermen to stay there from now until the end of January. And you know, obviously, when someone's on their back and has to make a living, they're gonna do what they have to do. But that, in my estimation, is a pretty tough place to work right now, and I don't look for many people to stay there. With the position the commission's taken on the 8-quart, if you have 8 quarts or more small oysters per bushel, the possibility of license revocation, that's a pretty tough, you know, offense for a waterman to be looking at, and it distinctly comes to play with this resource. So.
No, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. I'll just note, in a totally unnecessary aside, that while it's a bit of a travail as described there, we would have died to have this problem 5 years ago. More discussion on this.
One thing I would add is I sell to a small oyster house. It has about 20 oystermen, and the oyster house I sell to will not buy Great Wicomico oysters, period.
Interesting. Mr. Erskine.
I just had a question, I guess. It's for Jim. We did, and we heard some of this in the public hearing, and since you asked about Great Wicomico and the Rappahannock and things, I'd like to get your take on the two-week or eight-day work session, I guess, that was in Pocomoke Sound areas, I guess it was 9 and 10. was it productive? And, you know, what did you find with, you know, the number of boats in there and what's happened since? And how many oysters came out of there? And, you know, generally your take on whether it was productive.
Well, when we discussed that, what we're talking about is the biological condition of oysters in that area. The number of oysters on those 9 and 10, when they started, was the same as it is in the lower part of Pocono Sound. It's somewhere around 1 to 1.2 oysters per meter. And that, you know, that is already in not biological significance. I mean, they are already past the point of, I don't know where the spawn is going to come from to repopulate those areas. And when we opened it, that's not to say there are oysters there. That there are, when you use a hand scrape, and that's the thing you have to continually remember with our fishery right now, is that these things are so efficient that if it's one per meter, and each of those areas, 9 and 10, are 700, 800 acres, that calculates out to 7,000 or 8,000 bushels of oysters on each of those areas. And if you pull a dredge 10 boat lengths, you have done more than 100 square meters that you've gone over. There are no shallop there. So you come up with clear oysters, and it looks like you have a bonanza. So, I mean, it's not an issue. There's no oysters there. It's just that we are below where there's any kind of spawning efficiency there of males and females being close to each other. The flip side of that, they've already quit in Pocono, lower Pocono, because down there we have shells. And the one per meter, when you go that 100 meters with the dredge, you get a bunch of shells and one or two oysters. So you can't, again, you can't get any time. It's the same oyster per meter as that you fill your dredge up so much faster when you have shells and you don't. So it gives the illusion up there that they're oysters. And if, you know, if we want to add time up there, it just digs our hole deeper as far as being able to come back. To even think about going to the one little area, 11, that we actually have a few oysters right now, you know, that area is about 5 or 6 oysters per meter. It's the only probably lifeline we got to come back in the next 5 years up there. It'll be very, very dangerous. I mean, it is very bleak up there. I mean, and it's bleak on the Maryland side, too. Things just look entirely different with these dredges that are so efficient and what they show you.
Dr. Wesson, let me ask a question. We have a motion on the table here that includes opening up the James River for January for hand scrapes. And your professional evaluation, is there a problem with that?
No, as long as we come back and take March out. It's fine. I mean, the industry could have chosen that before. They had seen what happened, that March last year was a desert. There was nothing for them to do. So they said, well, let's put that in there to come back to after we did the York. And if the Mobjack was as good as the York, that would be a possibility. But the fact is, it's not this year. So biological is no difference.
More discussion. Mr. France.
Well, I know if Sachs in that area didn't get any relief, I would look for those. As somebody spoke in public comment earlier, those 75 or 80 boats are going to come to the James River. And it's going to be that much more pressure. But, you know, watermen do have to work. They have to make a living.
Well, Mr. Ballard.
Is there a plan to reshell the Saxis area if it's looking so terrible? Or?
Well, I mean, we reshelled the main workhorse area down in Lower Pocono Sound. And the problem right now is that we have way, way more areas that need reshelling every year than we have funds. Our $2 million won't get everywhere. So we prioritize. If you decide to go make some brand new areas, that's going to take you away from the really important areas in the Rappahannock and Lower Tangier and James and everything, that and York, that you know, are your constant workhorses. So we've really gotten our place where we are right now with the amount of funds that we have, that it's almost impossible for us to go make new areas unless we decide just to give up on some other areas. So that's not enough money to go around.
As a follow-up to that, wasn't there an issue as well with the industry asked for it not to be reshelled due to
from
Maryland?
And we kind of missed our opportunity in 2013 when we probably could have scraped some money to go there. But instead, we did reshell some areas below, but because we've had 2 years in a row with no spats, we've not gotten any, those shells are sitting there waiting. So we did use the shell. We just moved them down a little bit farther from the line.
Okay. And is that the area 9 and 10 that they're asking about that we moved away from?
And they did not want to do that because they thought it would be an attractive nuisance for us.
So what would be, I'm just looking for education. I mean, if we're not going to reshell it and reinvest in the area, are the oysters that are there, I mean, is there any hope of them spawning and rebuilding the rock on their own? I guess some questions, should we just let them get them up if we're not going to reinvest in the area?
I mean, the other side of that is that, you know, when we look at a lot of the models on how larvae move around and stuff, I mean, a lot of them point to upstream moving downstream. So we may have already, that area that we took away in 2013, may have been what was populating the lower area for us.
Right.
So already. But I don't think that you can give up on an area. I'm hoping with all the positive stuff that's going on with orchards, you know, that they'll look at our shell budget and see that if they want to maintain this fishery, we've got to shell more. Because we're still well below what the Blue Ribbon panel suggested in 2007, and shells cost 2.5 times more. So if you want to maintain this industry, we'll have to have shell. And I don't think that you can give up on there and say that we should take everything out of it. Because hopefully at some point you get some shell and you'll be able to get it going. But we're getting the shell around as much as we can. And we all knew going into this year, this is the situation. I mean, we have a lot of people. We've had 2 years in a row, 3 years out of four with no spat set, and you know we've been planting the shells in that time. But there's nothing coming for this year, and there's nothing coming much for next year. It'll be like this again next year. But we've seen a great spat set this year that should pop us back up again in, I don't even know what the year we're talking about, 17, 18. It'll go back up, but. You know, what you want to do is you want to be shelling as much as you possibly can, so as many of these places are available whenever these good years come up, and, you know, that you'll be able to take advantage of them and have a lot of stock out there to work from. So.
Any other discussion from the commission? Let me reset where we're at. We have a motion by Mr. Erskine and a second by Mrs. Kellum to accept staff recommendation with the addition of opening the James River for hand scraping in the month of January. Any more discussion on that? Let me call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Dr. Wesson. And thanks for everybody in the audience who gave their input. I appreciate it.